Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's JAS call on Tuesday the 8th of June, we have Evan Leibovich, Harry Doria, Carlos Aguirre, Tijani Benjima, Esther Greenberg, Andrew Mack, Priest. From staff, we have Glenda Saint-Géry, Olaf Nordling, myself, Gruber White. Apologies from Olga Cavalli, James Galvin, Ram Mohan, Cheryl Langdon Orr, and Alex Gakuru. If I could please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes, and we're still trying to get hold of Richard. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Before starting on WT1, I just wanted to say one thing regarding the charter. There, even though both GNSO and ALAC approved it, we have some insecurity about whether they approve the right version. We're operating under the version that we put forward and basically just notifying both of them to, we're operating under this one, please check and make sure you've approved the right one, et cetera. So I think that's it for the update. On the agenda, we've switched around WT1 and WT2 because Evan has a hard stop. Evan, it's yours.
Actually, now that I'm considering some of the email that's going back and forth, maybe other people in the call can correct me, but it almost seems like people in WT1 are coming to an impasse because we're trying to talk about some of the methods, some of the issues, some of the areas where money can be, where costs can be reduced while still maintaining the rationale of cost neutral. On the other hand, it seems like we're getting stuck very frequently on who, on the who issue, which is a WT2 thing. And it seems like it's going to be more difficult moving on to figure out how we're going to reduce the money until we have a clearer idea of who's going to be actually doing the applying. I don't know if anybody on the call would disagree with that, but it seems like WT1, I mean, there's some discussions going, but there's a little bit of an area where we seem to be stuck, and that's not, that stuck isn't going to be cleared until we have a clearer idea of who.
Sorry, can I ask a question since I don't see any hands up yet? I don't quite understand that, so I'm wondering if you could explain why talking about methods for reducing, and if the methods of reducing are dependent on the who, is that something that perhaps WT1 can explain to the folks working, you know, to the rest of the group, as why it is the case that they need to know who it is?
I can answer that best I can, because I guess I'm the one bringing it up. At least this is my observation. I'm trying to sort of not be front and center in the discussion itself, which is lively enough as it is. But it seems that some of the issues such as, well, can we ask for reduced costs because there's reduced complexity to ICANN in the process? And that also is affected by who's applying. Do you see what I mean, Avery? So depending on the organization, some organizations may have to go through a greater or lesser amount of due diligence, or some things may be less confrontational, require less work by ICANN to process, and in that case allows us to justify reducing the cost while maintaining the cost neutral.
Okay.
I'm just saying that's I've been reading that into some of the discussions. Are there others here that would either disagree or want to take that further?
Can I ask a further question?
Please.
In taking that into consideration, I've often heard that from, for example, established registries sort of saying, we exist already, we're established, we obviously know how to do it, nobody has to check us for technical capability. So if we're talking about differential rates, then we should pay less too. Is that being taken into account, or is there some notion that still there would need to be some merit reason for that happening, or is it just that it is easier, therefore they should pay less?
At least from what I've been reading, I would say there's definitely a merit issue. We've had a couple of go-arounds on, one of the issues, should this be restricted to non-profit applicants or for-profit applicants? And the resolution of that is, I think, going to have something to do with merit, as well as do you just meet a certain amount of hard criteria. Okay, Alan, I see your hand up. Go ahead. Alan?
Are you mute?
Hi, Alan.
About that. I thought the question Avery asked was not should we give preferential rates to established registries, but could the same argument be used for them because the costs would be lower for their evaluation also? And I thought the issue was when the costs were originally presented that these were averages factoring in some are easy, some are not easy. And if we're trying to counter that right now, I think we have to at least acknowledge that's what they said and say why the situation has changed.
I don't know if the situation has changed so much, Alan, except for the fact that we are trying to find ways of demonstrating that there are ways of reducing the cost for quote unquote worthy applicants that will still maintain the policy of cost recovery.
I understand what we're trying to do, I strongly support it. But the issue is if some applications will cost $1 to evaluate and some will cost $9, and they set the component of that evaluation at 5, averaging it out, telling them to only charge 1 right now for those who are at 1 will raise the cost to 9 for the others. And if I'm not wrong, and I may be, my understanding was they had said that is how they did it. So if we're asking for the 1, we need a rationale that factors in that original logic. Otherwise, we're asking them to raise the price on some people, and that's a no-starter, I think.
Well, it sounds like they're asking for 3 separate goals which are mutually incompatible. They want fairness between all the applicants, they want cost recovery, and they want an ability to give a break to some applicants. It would seem between those 3 that one of them has to give.
Remember, this whole thing came in at the very end of the process.
That's only because I can't put it in at the very end of the process. As you know, ALAC has been campaigning for this for some time.
And not only ALAC, but we can't change history. I'm just saying
right. That
if we pretend that statement about averaging never was stated, that's going to be their answer. We should make sure that it's mentioned and they understand we know about that and still believe there is an opportunity to do something. I'm just trying to take away the easy rejection.
Okay. Do you have one? Do you have an answer?
No, I don't.
Okay. Does anyone else here have something to comment on that?
Andrew has his hand up.
Oh, go ahead.
Andrew? Can you hear me? Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely. Go ahead, Andrew.
Okay. It sounds like a couple of things. First of all, I think what you're saying has some real merit, that there are these 3 goals or 2.5 goals or whatever, and that there is a level at which they may be a tiny bit incompatible. But I think that there may be ways to square the circle, in part by trying to break through a little bit about, I think fairness is a bit of a difficult one to quantify, in the sense that everybody comes with some significant advantages or disadvantages, and one of the things that we can make the argument about is that we're trying to actually level the playing field a little bit for applicants that might otherwise have a really hard time getting in. In terms of cost recovery, I get you about the principle, but I also think that there does strike me that there's a little bit of wiggle room as long as we come out relatively close. And part of that is going to depend on volume. As I recall, there are an awful lot of this depends on the number of applicants that end up coming into the system. So can I make a suggestion, though? Based on what we have done so far, where the conversation has gone so far, maybe it would make sense to try to dive into the working group 2 ideas and then see if that helps us with working group one. I originally wasn't sure whether that would make sense, but based on this conversation so far, maybe it does.
Well, you've touched on a very important point, Andrew, and that is, and I guess I didn't state it very well at the beginning, that the issue that we need to get back to WT1 is not necessarily just who, but also that relates to how many.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you know, the end result of what we're doing is that maybe 10 applicants may be able to apply, that's far different from, well, there's 100 that will meet our criteria. So you're right, I think, that this has a bearing, and thank you for expanding on what I should have done at the beginning, that it's not just who, but the who also gets into an issue of how many. Okay, Andrew, did you have any follow-up?
No, I'll hold off and let other people speak, but come back probably.
Okay, I have Alan and then Tijani.
Yeah, I think that the issue of how many is absolutely critical. And we've talked around it a number of times, but because we don't have the answer, we keep on forgetting it. The smaller the number, the more palatable anything that we suggest is. And again, it comes out that the averages were based on certain assumptions they made. We don't know what those assumptions are.
But do you agree that that brings us back to who? That creating a sufficiently set of tight criteria is going to reduce the number?
Yes, certainly. But all I'm saying is again, when we present this case, if we need to say we understand how they're calculated, but this is why it is not as important as you might otherwise have thought it was, that kind of thing.
Got it. Okay, Tijani, you're next. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. You know, Evan, if we stick to this problem of how many, we will not go forward because we don't have the answer and nobody can give the answer. So, I think that we have to work on both tracks. I will not say absolutely independently, but. We have to address the questions as they are asked, and then when we will compile all together, perhaps we will change or modify something according to the input of the other group. But if we stick to this notion of being stuck because the other group didn't give the number or something like this, it will be a problem for us.
To Jenny, I'll just answer that, at least from what my reading of the discussions, is not saying that we need a hard number, but we need something that will at least give some confidence that there's not going to be a flood of applicants under this reduced cost program. I'm not saying that the idea of the two work teams have to go away. Obviously, there's still significant work that needs to be done in the methods for reducing the cost. But we've heard a couple of speakers on this call already say that the saleability of this program to the board and the rest of the community is going to be determined partially on whether or not this is going to create a new flood of new low-cost applicants or whether the number is going to be significantly small, that we're not going to get a lot of complaints about the fairness issue.
Yes, I understand. I absolutely understand, but we don't have any way to know, or at least to have an average. We don't have. So, shall we be stuck?
Shall we be stuck? I guess that depends on us.
No, we don't have, I think. Okay.
Okay.
Can I ask a question, Mrs. Avery? We had, I guess what was put forward was the beginning of a document that is in the Adobe screen now, on the new GTLD applicant support, and we did need to produce some sort of where we are at now paper or what have you. So I'm wondering, and it's in the Adobe screen now, I'm wondering to what extent that is a base we can build on before moving on and before losing you, Evan. I'm wondering if we could address that a little.
So, in other words, you want to take the document that we have in front of us right now and start to turn that into a report to be given for Brussels?
I don't know. I'm asking the question whether that is a suitable place to start, whether we need something different,
I also see Elaine and Olaf both have hands up now, too.
Okay.
I wanted to get the question on the table.
Okay. Yeah, Elaine, you were first. Go ahead.
Good morning. This is Elaine Proust speaking. The document that we have in the Adobe room, I don't think we have enough consensus to put that forward as what we're proposing to ICANN. We haven't really come to agreement that eliminating the cost of risk is something that we can agree on. But I would like to point out that we haven't really discussed, in the second page, there's a bullet point allowing special applicants to pay on a per-phase basis. I think we should put some attention there as a working group. I think that's, as an applicant, you might be able to get, you know, some funding up front, and then if you succeed the first evaluation period, you could get some more as you go on. I think that's a worthwhile path to go down.
So in other words, rather than the conventional pay everything and then apply for refunds, just pay the stages one at a time.
Yeah, I think that's a more viable a way of financing this project for someone who might not be able to get all of the funding up front.
Okay, so that doesn't reduce the cost, but it helps spread it out and reduce the risk of an application that may not get all the way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have Olaf and then Alan, and then I'm going to have to run.
I just wanted to add, to introduce that this document was the second document that Tony Harris sent to the list some 2 weeks ago, and of course a lot of things have happened since. I just wanted to be able to bring up one of the documents, but actually a flurry of emails in Working Team 1, so things have advanced since this.
Okay. Next in the queue, I have Alan again, and that'll be it before I have to go.
Okay,
Alan,
thanks,
go.
Thanks for being here.
Okay, I haven't been able to follow all the emails, so I'm not quite sure what the current status is. One of the suggestions I made way early was that we ask for a waiving or significant reduction in the $25,000 ongoing fee and move some of the application fee into that. So in other words, it still may cost them $25,000 a year, but it would be that
revenue
would be deferred from the application fee.
So the $185 up front would be reduced to some other, but that $185 would not be waived so much as deferred. It would be the ongoing cost that would be waived, and it would sort of be like an installment plan.
You got it.
Okay. On that phenomenal note, I've got to go. I'll try and rejoin the call later on, but no promises. And okay, so Avery, it's all yours, and I'll be following you guys on the Adobe Connect as I can.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, bye.
Okay, so continuing on this, Olaf, is this, so now you're showing just, I guess, what is the second page of that?
Yes,
it was up there.
Thing made reference to that. I showed the second page.
Right. So is there a suggestion that basically this be what is reported, just that second page, or is that?
I think the idea was to special care about, and that perhaps there was consensus on the second bullet point on that page, the allow special applicants.
Right.
On a per-phase basis.
But in terms of, but all the options seem to be being discussed, and I don't think that any, has there been a consensus to throw any of the particular bullet items out? Elaine?
Yes, I think the things that we have agreed on are that there may be ways to reduce the 185 by asking for the sunk cost to be eliminated for our applicants. The thing that's contentious is this idea that the risk cost could be tossed out for applicants, and we haven't really been able to agree on that because of the definition of what is that risk cost, and the idea that our applicants might be of lower risk, but that's not really what the risk cost was intended to be. So that part right there, the risk cost, is what we haven't been able to agree upon. We have agreed that we could ask for a lower application fee for our applicants, and we have agreed that it might be a good idea to ask if we could pay on a per-phase basis, or as was just stated, that we could sort of have the applicants pay as they go, or pay back as they go. So I think we can. I think we need to write up something else. I don't think this actual document in front of us should be put forward in its current state.
Thank you. If from listening to that, if I'd like to put on the table as a suggestion, is if the second page were what was built on, not the first page, if there was basically two sections, one of them would be some options that seem to be gaining general support, and then listing the ones that Elaine listed, if that's indeed the case, and then a second bullet, some items that have been discussed but have not yet reached, you know, any determined level of support or some such words, and then listing the ones that are far less, and it came to something that was less than a page. Would that work for people? And I'll go to Tijani and ask others to respond to that as we go on. And I see Olaf's hand is up also. But Tijani.
Yes. Avri, I remember that we said and we explained that the resolution talked about the application and the ongoing costs. So we can work on the content of the Resolution 20. And the elimination or the reduction of the development and risk costs is very, I think, it's very acceptable. And there was a lot of support to this idea. So for the first bullet point, I think that there was, I don't say there is unanimity, but there is a big support for this point.
Okay, so you're objecting to it being listed as something where there isn't support yet, that it's mentioned just as an item that's under discussion, but support has not been determined yet. You're arguing that there's strong support for that point at the moment. Okay. Olaf?
Oh, very quickly. I mean, when we come to discussing what we can put forward, if we don't have agreement on something, it's perhaps easier to put something forward as a question to the community, because we can open a public comment period, I suppose we should do, in conjunction with the posting.
Yep.
Good idea.
Okay, so basically, it sounds though like there's still, if I'm listening correctly, there's really two categories of idea. There's ideas that seem to be generally accepted by all, and I mean there still may be some objections and what have you, in terms of sunk costs, in terms of the variance on phasing and paying as you go. And then there are issues that are still open questions that require further discussion, such as the development and risk costs, et cetera. Is that a fair way of putting it?
Avri?
Yes, John.
I didn't say that I am objecting for the second bullet point. Both can be valid, and both are valid for me.
Right, I understand what I was trying, and I didn't say that you were, and I probably didn't make myself clear. I was saying that there are some points, like bullet two, that everyone seems to be accepting. No one has spoken again. And then there are other points, like the development risk cost, where some people still have questions and discussion about it and haven't reached quite the level of support that I'm hearing for, you know, sunken costs and for phasing, etc. So that's how I was sort of dividing those, that there seems to be general agreement, more discussion is still needed to develop the ideas, and that there are some where
you know, there are still questions and more discussion is needed. So it's kind of a nuance between the two categories, but I was proposing that if we could lay out those in that way, then we are at least putting something before the public that sort of says, here, these are the things we're talking about. We seem to be finding support, strong support here. We have some support here. You know, we still have questions and discussions. Let's talk. Does that make sense to people? I see one check. I see Andrew with a hand up. Go ahead, Andrew.
Yes, having, what you're saying makes sense. I mean, it basically says, you know, if our goal is to report back to the community where we are, we have agreement on some things, and we have some issues that are still at issue. Fair enough. My only caution would be, let's see how far we can push it to get some sort of an agreement, because if we really want there to be action on this, then the smaller number of issues that we throw out to the public for their input, the more likely we are to get to some real action in the nearer term. My only concern would be that it turns into kind of a long conversation and involves, you know, billions of people. We may never really get where we want to go. That's all.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Yeah, Andrew, I think that's good, and I'm going to ask Olaf something in a second. I think one of the things, though, at least within GNSO, and I assume it's similar within ALAC, that at a certain point there's an initial report that goes out where you do have to collect people's opinions. And so while this isn't in the shape yet of a first initial formal report, what we're doing at this point is trying to put stuff on the table and solicit the community's first opinion, because that's sort of the process we have to go through.
And Avery, to be clear, I understand the process. What I'm suggesting is only a nuance to that, which is the following. If we say to the community, here's what we like, here's what we think, and here are the three questions that we're really grappling with, we're going to get a better output from the community, in my mind, than if we give them 10 questions. That's all.
Okay, yeah, okay, thanks, certainly. Olaf, I said I was going to come back to you with a question. Have you heard enough in this discussion and from following, and of course there's still going to be a little bit more discussion, although we're really getting pretty close to the end of, you know, we perhaps have one more meeting. You know, we're already beyond any formal report publication date, be that as it may. I think we have to get something out real soon now. A, can you tell me what real soon now is? And B, on at least WT1, do you think you have enough from this conversation to be able to put a draft on the table? And can you? Do you have the time? That sort of covers what we just said.
On the question of when, well, there is in our planning we have something like the 15th of June.
Yes, I remember that.
That was the aim for date. On the question of drafting, that was not my plan, nor with the number of other things I have to do, do I feel really comfortable and trying to condense this into. I've seen this working group as much more in the similar vein as IRT, meaning that this is drafting. To start with mine, trying to condense it into something, we can talk offline about how we perhaps could advance this, but it's from two perspectives, it's a difficult matter.
Okay, so I'll have to find another way to get it written. Okay. Okay. I guess I don't know where to go on that one. We'll have to talk about it offline. Either that or Evan or I guess, at the end of the day, or whoever's, we'll have to write that. But at this point, I want to try and get something written from a fairly neutral perspective that can put out a report of where things are. Okay, is there anything else on WT1 at this point? Is there anyone from WT1 that feels comfortable writing up this neutral one-pager and getting it in front of the group for discussion?
we basically have 7 days until the 15th, which means at the next meeting we would need to basically do whatever final wordsmithing needed to be done on it and then put it forward for, you know, and then basically decide, yes, this is what we're going out with. I don't see any hands.
Avery, this is Andrew. A question for you. Does it make sense, because we have some issues that bleed from group two to group one and back again. Are we really trying to do two separate reports, or should we try to combine them to the greatest extent possible?
We should try to combine them, but we've had two WTs working, and so I think in the first instance it strikes me that we should have each of them writing up its status. And
okay.
We need a chapeau or an introductory thing to sort of explain how they're interrelated and hold it together as a single report. That's sure.
Okay. The reason why I mention this is because there are a number of issues that bounce back and forth, such as things like bundled pricing, which we've talked about, such as things like the number of applicants and how that's going to affect pricing and how that's going to affect the cost calculation. And I don't know if it's possible to disentangle them completely. And I'm just asking from a practical perspective what's best for our audience. I don't have a strong sense of the right answer. I'm just throwing it out there.
Yep. Okay, thanks. Elaine?
Yes, I will be happy to take a swing at writing up a one-page summary of where we're at in WT1. And I think that you're correct in saying that we can't really separate the two, so how about if we put out a two-page document? One page covers WT1 and the other covers WT2.
Okay. I thank you, Elaine, first of all, for the volunteering. I tend to agree we might need a third page, just a cover page that talks about the relation between the two and the group in general, but I think that's a good idea.
Aubrey, is this something I can put on the wiki? And can it be a working document? That
I think so. I think so. I think we can open up a subordinate page for it, a subpage, and make it a wiki document because it's trivial at the end to cast it off into Word format and then turn it into PDF. That's quite easy from the wiki. So I would think, sure. I think that would be a great way to go about it. Then other people can help edit it and whatever as it goes on.
Great.
Thank you. Anything else on WT1 before we move on? Okay, thanks. Then on WT2, we have, I guess there's a couple pieces of writing. I think, Andrew, you were the one that submitted the latest update. And Olaf, okay, you are doing. Thank you. Am I correct, Andrew?
Yes. Aubrey, I was the primary putter down on paper, but it came with significant inputs from Carlos and from Alex both.
Okay.
So I want to acknowledge the fact that I'm not the only author nor the only contributor.
Right, I understand. You were the one at least holding the pen. I see Carlos.
That's right. You got it. I'm the person with the keyboard.
Right. Yeah, I know. We still call it a pen, even though people.
It's pretty funny, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, Carlos. I see you have your hand up.
Thank you, Avery. Thank you, Andrew. We work a lot with Andrew in this point, but we consider that it's not very easy to define some points, who and what, but our idea was to maintain the groups. We receive support. For example, in who would receive the support, we think that ethnic and linguistic communities are the groups what need to receive support, and it's clear and have not we think that it's not controversial at this point. Ethnic and linguistic communities need to receive support. For example, another group, for example, NGOs and other groups it's more problematic because it's necessary, it's needed to define what kind of groups need to receive support. We think it's necessary to discuss point by point of our document because it's long and we discuss a lot during the week. We need the help and support of the other members of the working group in this point. For example, Alex says in the email list or mentioned the idea of civil society of wiki concepts. Seems to me very interesting to put here in the who would receive support more than ethnic and linguistic communities. Seems to me civil society with the concept contained in a wiki page the Wikipedia is very interesting. What do you think, Andrew? Please help me.
Okay. In terms of amplify a little bit on what Carlos said, we were trying to do exactly what I think it was Alan mentioned earlier, which was to try and narrow the field so that we actually get approval in the early stages by starting with what we believe to be the least controversial groups. And that's why Group A struck us as the easiest. It's more self-defined and all of that. In terms of Group B, when Alex was talking about Group B, we had down the whole idea of NGOs, and Alex suggested that we broaden that to include civil society because there are elements of civil society, which is, from my experience, defined in terms of not being private sector, not being government, and all of that. That other parts of civil society that might very well fit into this Group B definition. But the same point holds, which is that Group B is a lot mushier, more controversial, and in terms of us getting ourselves organized, in terms of us coming up with a program of support that is bounded by time and bounded, that doesn't lead to a flood of applications and very vague applications that will suck up a lot of resource, we thought to start with Group A. To go through the rest of this category, we looked at preference being given to, obviously, to historically underserved regions. And then we have a list of people, the list of groups that we thought made sense for there not to be given support. So maybe at this point it would be worthwhile to hear from anybody and say any comments on this, on the who would receive support, any questions, and maybe any unanswered issues that we haven't come up with so far.
Hi. This is our
problem. Sorry, Andrew. Another point interesting to mention is we think that the who would receive support is also the applicants who geographically located in emerging markets and developing countries. We consider very important this point. And other groups who their languages have a limited presence into the web. So to complete your idea, Andrew, and to put in the table to discussion.
Thank you, Carlos.
Thanks. This is Aubrey. I wanted to mention two questions, and then I'll go on to the hands. One is, in this work, when you're talking about receiving support, are you differentiating per group, for example, which would receive the financial level support versus which would receive all the support in kind type of issues? And does that make a difference? And in terms of the differentiations of groups, do you consider, for example, in your group B that you say is more controversial, for example, how do you deal with the fact that many NGOs are advocacy NGOs? Does that make a difference? Many NGOs, it's difficult to tell whether they're a government-organized NGO or just a you know, actual civil society NGO, how do you propose dealing with those issues? And also, I noticed that there was a discussion of nonprofit, profit, organization, and I wonder whether that distinction is necessarily as clear in all developing areas and such. So I'm just wondering on some of those issues whether you might find some where there's a notion that one group, you're talking about any and all kinds of aid, and one group, you're talking about aids in kind, perhaps. So you're not excluding, but you're not giving money. Just questions. I have Tijani with his hand up.
Yes, thank you, Avery. In fact, you're right, even if I understand very, very bad, because I hear you very bad, but I think that I understood what you said. I think the most controversial point is the for-profit or for non-profit. Who shall we select only the for non-profit, the non-for-profit applicants, or even some for-profit applicants? There is another point about the emerging market. It's absolutely right, because even the board and its resolution 20, they spoke about developing countries. So the target was there. Third point, I think that we need to consider both the applicant and the string, because I think Hélène gave an example about the dot sugar or dot coffee, perhaps. Her point is very valid. You can be a civil society organization, and you can be for non-profit, etc. But if you apply for a string that is common, that any multinational can apply for, it will not be relevant, and it will not be possible to support this kind of string. So, there is other cases where the string is very important. So we have to consider, we have to give criteria for the applicant and criteria for the string. And inside the matrix, when do we match, we can give support.
Okay. Thank you, Johnny. I had Andrew, and then I had Elaine. Andrew.
Oh, okay, great. First of all, Avery and Johnny, those are both excellent questions, and I will do my best to try to reflect what our little subgroup has been thinking about these and some of the conversation that we've been having online. Avery, to your point about NGOs, governments, and the like, I couldn't agree more. It's one of the reasons why we divided the world up into an A group and a B group. I think offering to the A group is relatively straightforward, and for all the reasons you mentioned and a number of others, offering to the B group will take more time and will need, frankly, a little bit more study because of all of the nuances that you mentioned, because of the possibility of, because of the conflicts in terms of things like advocacy groups and government penetration and all kinds of other things. So that's why we suggested that we start with Group A. The hope, and perhaps it was a heroic one, but the hope was that if we get going in that group, then we can learn enough to get farther forward that will allow us in a later point in time, depending on volume, also to go forward with a broader civil society group. In terms of aid, there clearly are three different kinds, actually, if you think about it, of aid that might be that we think are likely. One is direct aid. Here's consulting help. Here's translation help. Here's whatever it is, right? That directly goes into an application, assuming that it is approved. A second kind of aid would be in-kind aid, might be the same kinds of things that are approved in the first group. And the third kind of aid is something that facilitates language build-out, like bundled pricing, which is the other thing. It's farther down. In each of these, I think the question is, where we've tried to take our point of departure is, what's the goal that we're trying to accomplish with this? And in each of these, the goal to try to do it is to get languages and cultures that are not currently on the web on the web to the greatest extent in their own language and in their own script. So that's from that perspective. From to Johnny's point about the nonprofit for-profit, I think Elaine made a good point on the conversations earlier on this week, where there are a lot of us who said, hey, look, there are some nonprofits that function like for-profits in some ways, and some for-profits that function more like nonprofits. There are actually some hybrids. What it means to be a nonprofit depends on the jurisdiction in which you are. And so, therefore, from my perspective and from the perspective of our little group, we thought that it meant it was probably better to focus on what the purpose of the GTLD is going to be, what the end goal is going to be, and to be a little bit more agnostic. We do have down farther in the document the notion that whether this thing starts as a for-profit or starts as a non-profit but becomes so big and profitable and money-generating that it can self-support earlier on, that the notion that there should be some sort of repayment of the assistance funds, which might go back into a revolving fund. So, again, the goal is to make sure that people who need resources to get out of a disadvantaged position get out of that position, but that if there's money that comes into it that can be repaid, then that makes sense. And finally, in terms of the question about string competition, look, it's a legitimate question. But again, we go back to the initial point, which is to try to get new things, new communities on the web. And so if a particular – my personal inclination – I'm only speaking for myself, but we've had this conversation a number of times. My personal inclination is that if there is a string like .coffee, which will likely be picked up by the private sector, we do not wish to be, with our very, very limited resources, encouraging competition between one subsidized group and any number of potentially non-subsidized groups, but rather to try to find a way to get that competition to not happen. Does all of that make sense?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Sorry to go on for long.
Okay. I have Elaine, and then Tijani, was your hand
back
up?
No, excuse me. I will. Okay,
so Elaine, close yours.
Okay.
Yeah, so thinking about who, and we've identified two different groups. One we all seem to agree on, the ethnic and linguistic communities, and then the other is sort of more open and trickier, as it's stated in the document. I'm wondering how much flexibility in our interpretation of providing this assistance is. And my thought here is, if we say, for the very clear communities and strings that obviously need help, that would obviously raise public interest in the internet and serve their communities, that we would provide much more assistance to. And then for the others that are sort of, maybe they need help and maybe it would be good for their community, we could just sort of guide them towards identified providers of assistance rather than pull them into our group. So what I'm thinking is we have sort of two levels of assistance where it's clearly obvious that this group would benefit from our help and we have no question about providing funds, and I think this is mostly about funds in my mind, to them. So that's one level where we do everything we can to help them, and then another level of assistance could be offered where we're just sort of identifying ways that they could be assisted, and it might not be through our program specifically, but more of we're an information clearinghouse for them, so we can say, well, we know this particular provider is willing to do, you know, less expensive legal advice or something along those lines. Does anybody have any thoughts about that?
Hi. This is Aubrey speaking again. I think that's actually probably a very good suggestion. I think that was kind of the direction. I think the other thing that needs to be applied to, and perhaps that's a third category, is there's the providing of financial aid, and I'm really hoping that there is a way to do that. But there's also the to whom do the WT1 effects apply? Mm-hmm. And as to whom do the reduction apply? And is that
just a subgroup of A is that, for example, one of the things that is kind of not been talked about, I mean, I've seen a little bit of conversation, is sort of the preference on IDN versus non-IDN. Now, I know that at a certain point that prejudices some marginalized groups who happen to be in an ASCII world, and so that's a hard, bright line to draw. But I'm wondering, you know, and then the other thing that Trisdazani mentioned that I have concerns about is string determination. In that, one of the things that you know, from a GNSL perspective, they try to keep ICANN away for is making determinations on string. I understand if somebody else is competing for it, but I think we also have to be concerned there, because if we get to the point that sort of we started working with someone, some indigenous groups have come up with, you know, the Indonesian.coffee in their own script, and the purveyors of .coffee and ASCII say, hey, it'd be great for us to have both, and they decide to enter a competition with them. Do at that point we sort of say, well, okay, now someone's decided to bid against you now that you've said what you're going to do, therefore we're no longer supporting. And I know that's putting it in a sort of brutal box, but that seems to be one possible outcome of saying, if there's competition for the string, you know, then support doesn't make sense. And so I worry about a posteriori, you know, competition for a string where once it's known, someone starts to compete. Andrew.
Yes, Avi, I think your concern is a very legitimate one. The reason we were going back to Alan's initial point, which is to try to narrow our criteria as much as possible, right? And so that's why we wanted to stick with, as much as possible in this initial round, groups where we didn't think that there was going to be much overlap or much bleed between potential commercial communities and the like. And at the same time, try to address the IDN issue in the other way, in the other direction. So I think you're right. I think that there are some real risks in the thought that we would be judge and jury. And I'll throw out another one, which is, at a certain point in time, if we've received or if we are supporting or trying to support offer support to a candidate, and then there's a conflict, where does ICANN or the supporting agency connected to it fall? Because we are no longer a neutral party if we're offering support, and there is a question as to who gets the string, right? And in a normal legal case, you'd recuse yourself because you'd be an interested party on the basis of the support you'd offered. So I think it becomes fairly complicated. We thought that the best way to approach this was to go with the less controversial string in the short term.
Okay.
Make sense?
Thank you. Olaf.
Yes, let's not forget what's already in the applicant guidebook when it comes to string contention. Preferential.
The echo's back.
Thought that?
You're breaking up and the echo is back.
Okay. Guidebook already gives preference for community applicants in cases of string contention, if they so wish. Provided they fulfill all the requirements that we've put up, then for being a bona fide community applicant. So I think we should stay clear of the string contention cases in this particular endeavor, because there is already quite an elaborate tool to handle that, which goes some way in providing particular support for the groups that I see that you put in Group A, which typically would be a community. So I think it's already there in the applicant guidebook, and it's already foreseen that we have that kind of that kind of preferential treatment for bona fide communities when it comes to string contention situations.
Okay, thank you, Olaf. I see Elaine's name up. The question I'd ask are these limited to community applications? Elaine.
Yeah, that was also my question, Olaf. If you're suggesting that we only assist those who can identify themselves as communities according to the applicant guidebook standards, and the second part of that is, do we then, if someone can identify themselves as a community, can they go for a more generic string, and then do we support them?
Well, it is limited to those being identified as communities. So that's very, very clear. All other cases, if there is string contention, there is no other solution than a voluntary resolution of it, of course, which is always an option, or the ultimate solution, which is an auction.
This is Aubrey, which, of course, anybody that was being supported would automatically lose. One other point that I wanted to bring up on Andrew's questions, and Andrew's hand's still up, so I don't know if you're wishing to speak again, which, of course, is fine, is when we talk about parties and neutral parties and who's doing what, I think one thing, and perhaps you have discussed this and I've just not seen it, is if there is aid being given of a financial sort, not talking about the fee reduction and not talking about the in-kind or support aid, is that something that is actually done by ICANN, or is that something that is done by a separate foundational entity that we would recommend being created to do this? And so that's something that... And so then the notion of advocating for a supported organization or supported application is not actually being done by ICANN or any subgroup of ICANN, but is being done by this affiliated entity that we have recommended the creation of. And that's, again, just a question. So, Andrew, I see your hand is still up. You must have intended it to be there. Andrew.
Yes. Okay. These are excellent questions, and they're right on the edges of kind of what we've been working on. So I will attempt to address them, okay? To Olaf's point about the community, we did start with what we perceived to be communities that would fit in with the DAG. From my personal perspective, the coffee community would not necessarily be, you know, like that might be a different kind of community entirely. That said, I think we're a little bit reticent to try to get into a full-on definition of who would and wouldn't fit the bar for the community. I think that to some extent the outside world should send us a pretty clear signal about that. Aubrey, to your point, you were just asking something I was going to give you a response to. Can you repeat your question real quickly?
Okay. The one that the last one that I brought up was the one of when you talked about interested entities and applying and supporting applications, and I'd asked the question whether, assuming that there is financial aid being administered.
Oh, right. Who would do the administering?
Exactly.
Okay. I think if there are, you know, this is a world I know a little bit about, and I think if there's some benefits in eventually maybe moving this slightly offshore, just because this is slightly outside of what I perceive to be ICANN's core expertise, but also just to avoid some of these conflict of interest issues and things like that. However, in the short term, I think that will be determined in part by who we can get to support this and how much support is on the table. If we're talking about a pilot program with a relatively limited amount of support, then I think it's less of an issue. If we're talking about a much larger amount of support, something that's institutionalized, my inclination would be to set it up as a separate trust fund, perhaps connected to but slightly offshore of the, slightly outside of ICANN as a legal entity, just to avoid any kind of conflict of interest issues.
Okay, thank you. Carlos, I see you have your hand up. Carlos?
Thank you, Abri. In relation with all of says before, talking about the applicant guidebook, and bona fide applicants. I'm a lawyer. It's difficult to me to think in bona fide applicants, or in other words, we need to define very, very well what group we want to give support, because in the business world it's very difficult to think in bona fide. So it's a great risk to put bona fide applicants. It's my comment. I don't know if you think the same than me, but we need to define very, 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 very well the idea to what group we want to give support. It was very difficult for us, Andrew and I, to put the definitions in the document, but it's needed to discuss more, because a good definition means the successful of our work. Thank you.
Thank you, Carlos. Olaf, you have your hand up.
Carlos' comments, because when I said bona fide, that was my little shorthand, and I'm not a lawyer. My son is. But that was shorthand for the rather elaborate scoring mechanism we have for the community priority evaluation, with four different criteria and a maximum of 16 points, and you need to score 14 to be considered a proper community applicant. But it is, there is an overlap, or rather, you could say that your group A here is typically is a subset of the total definition of communities that we that can apply. So, for example, let's take the coffee example. If you have all, or let's say the coffee growers example, have the Global Association of Coffee Growers applying for dot coffee grower, and the Global Association of National Coffee Growers or something like that, well, then you would score high in one could call the reach of the string, because you have a commensurability between the actual size of the community, which is then global, and the reach of that particular string, which is also could be considered, since it's very generic, global. So that's the kind of comparisons which are made in the community priority evaluation. But I just wanted to mention it because, as a subset, your group A would most certainly fit under that community definition.
Okay, thanks. We're at 10:12. We're at 12 minutes after the hour, so we've got about another 18. So I wanted to bring the WT discussion to a close. I wonder if anyone had any final points they had waited for the very end of the discussion to make. Okay, good.
Yeah, Aubrey, can I ask real quickly? Yeah, we've got down let's see. So everyone has taken a look at the three different kinds of support. In terms of the other recommendations, co-financing, sunset period, transparency, any of that stuff, need clarification? Anyone think that there is a problem with those as general principles?
Good question.
No, it's okay, Andrew.
Okay. Good enough. Just checking in. Want to make sure everyone's happy, right?
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
So what I'd like to move into now is the preparing of the snapshot. We've already talked in terms of when we're talking about WT1 and Elaine offered to prepare the one pager, and of course we're not being strict, one page, one and a half, you know, but the short update on that. Andrew, if I understand, you're still driving the keyboard, as it were, on preparing an equivalent thing for WT2 based on the document that's been in front of us. Is that correct?
I'm about to leave town for.
That's not correct.
But hold on. But if we can get it done in the next, you know, if you're comfortable, what are we looking for? Something that basically captures the three pages that we have in one.
Something that is basically explanatory of where we've gotten to. I think that the three pages you've got now can certainly be something that is referred to. But basically, yeah, basically given the positions, giving the sort of that same type of there seems to be agreement building on the following, there are still questions about the following, there's certain organizational, something slightly more explanatory than
okay.
The bullet here. But
okay.
Something that basically states where we are and what's being thought. I see Olaf with hand up.
Just to say that, of course, I would be happy to make the introductory few lines on the chapeau of the posting. I think that would be quite easily done, and then be followed by the Working Team 1 and Working Team 2 reports, and then sort of the arrangements for having public comments received and all that. So I'd take care of buns of the hamburger, if you like, but if I can get slices of meat in between, that's fine.
Okay, thank you.
Aubrey, just to be very clear, is there any part then of the discussion on Working Group 2 that people feel, and there are some really obvious fault lines on Working Group 1. I've not heard a lot of people say that they had concerns about what we were discussing, only that we're looking for more clarification as time goes on. So if that's okay, I'm going to take this and turn it into, here's where we are, unless someone has a very strong feeling of something that is out, you know, that they're uncomfortable with, which
okay.
I haven't heard.
Thanks. I see Elaine's up, hands up. One thing I want to say on that is, unless somebody gives you something now, I would go on that assumption, but, of course, be prepared for one of the good things about writing an exercise that says, I think there's consensus building, or I think there's strong support, is it often provokes the, wait a second, I don't think we're quite there yet type of comment. So if somebody gets to you, you know, before you've written it, or now perhaps Elaine or others get to it now, I think take it now. Otherwise, I would suggest write down what you think is the state and leave it to the rest of the group to basically say, that's why getting it out the next day, and then we've got the week, and we close on it at the next meeting, gives people a chance, and then we can always quickly, you know, shuffle things around and sort of say, there's two groups as opposed to one. Is that an acceptable way of looking at it?
Sure, I just wanted to make sure I had the, you know,
right.
I mean...
Understood.
Go.
Elaine.
Yeah, so on this document that Andrew's put together, there are two points that I don't remember any group discussion on, which is the co-financing and the sunset period. So if we don't have time to discuss it now, Andrew, when you do write this up, if you could just add a little explanation on how you came to those points, I would appreciate that.
Oh, okay, Elaine, I can do a 20-second explanation if you'd like.
Great, thanks.
Okay, sure, with pleasure. Co-financing... One of the things that came up in the conversations that we had, both our little group as well as they were hinted at in the larger group, was that we wanted to make sure that there was a sense of accountability, which from our experience, from a number of people who mentioned this, the experience is that for people who are themselves on some level financially committed, there's a higher level of follow-through, there's a higher level of sustainability. We were concerned, as a number of people mentioned, that on the one hand, we want to provide support, but on the other hand, we don't want to be providing support to people who aren't likely to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we figured some level of co-financing. I picked
the 50% was an arbitrary number that I proposed. Carlos said sounded fine, but that it was the principle more that we were after. In terms of the sun setting, what we are, both for practical reasons, that is to say, the amount of money that's going to likely be on the table, as well as principal reasons, we thought it was important to say to people, if you are still in need of support after a date certain, whether that date certain is 3 years or 5 years, I'm almost indifferent, because I think that depends on the process and how fast it goes. But at a certain point in time, you need to know that either you will sink or swim on your own. So if you can't attract enough side financing to maintain yourself or whatever at a certain point, then that's okay. We'll have to accept the fact that this is one that just doesn't have a strong enough economic rationale. Does that make sense? Both of those were principles designed for sustainability, frankly.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thanks. I mean, it may be worth also, when you're writing this, sort of saying that, you know, these two are still under discussion, given that there hasn't been a lot of discussion on them. But you know, I don't know if that's necessary, but...
My biggest concern, Aubrey, is trying to fit it on the one page or some facsimile there too.
Right. The one page is a manner of speaking.
Okay.
If it takes one and a half, if it takes two, I don't think that that's necessarily the issue. I think calling it a one pager, and Elaine, correct me if this is going against what you were suggesting, is saying that if you don't have to drag it longer, you don't have to go into great extent. If it takes you longer than a page to say what you need to say, I don't know that that's a problematic issue. As I said, Elaine, it was your idea. Let me know if I'm misunderstanding.
No, Aubrey, I prefer a document that is concise but also doesn't leave many questions so we can move forward.
Right. Sure. And we tried to include everything that we could that would be helpful to narrowing our field. My question is just because I'm very focused on getting this out to you before I leave, is in terms of the way that you think that this would be most useful to the community, are we looking at mostly text or mostly bullet points or a combination thereof? You know, I mean, because we wrote it in terms of bullet points because we thought that was easier for digestion, but I'm open.
I think, I don't know that it matters. I think bullet points sometimes don't give people enough information, so you sometimes need a line or two above explaining, and sometimes the bullet needs, you know, a line or two of explanation that it's not enough, but I don't think it really matters.
Okay,
I don't know if others care. I see Olaf with a hand up.
Yeah, on a very, very practical note, if we put it out for public comments, I would suggest we go well into July with a deadline for public comments, so people have time to digest what they hear and experience and discuss in Brussels, and we don't get pushback for having it too narrow and too close to the Brussels meeting. So I would say something like the 15th of July as a deadline for comments.
That's good.
But
any objections to that?
Yes.
Okay, Tijani, I see your hand up.
Yes. That means that we will have 1 month vacation. We will not work during...
It does not mean that. I don't think. But we can talk about that later, because I think that there's work we can do in terms of developing some of the ideas while waiting for comments, I would suppose. But, you know, we could certainly talk about that. I don't know that taking a vacation, maybe we can go to an every 2 week schedule and have at least one. We will have, for example, just coming out of the meeting, and this gets into the next thing, which is preparation for the meeting. We will have, just coming out of there, a number of comments already that we can start thinking about processing on some of the things where, you know, we think that we're finding general consensus, and the meeting gives us a feeling of, hey, you know, we didn't get strong objection to these ideas there. We can start digging down deeper. We don't have lots of time. Vacation's great, but, you know, I don't I'm not actually jumping up and saying, yes, vacation. I hope you don't mind. Any other hands on the snapshot? So we'll have that. It can be a document. It can be a wiki. If Andrew, you're not comfortable producing it as a wiki in the first place, one of us can move it there for you, so don't worry about that.
Thanks. It's just a question of time. If you
exactly.
don't mind, I'll shoot that to Olaf because I'm quicker on the keyboard and I'm really stretched for time.
No, as I say, and if Olaf doesn't have the time to put it up for the wiki, I can certainly do that at some point.
Thank you, Avery.
So that's not an issue. The preparation for the Brussels meeting. Anything else on the snapshot before I move off to Brussels? Okay, the preparation for the Brussels meeting is, I guess it's coming along. Olaf, I don't know if you've got any updates on board speakers or timings or anything like that.
Well, the timing is final. It's 5:30 on Wednesday. And we've got a location as well. I can't recall which one, which room it is, but it's on the agenda. However, we had a brief discussion on a title as well, and the title that we actually agreed upon, or you and Evan agreed upon, well, it turned out to be too long, so we're back to applicant support for GTLD as a title in the program.
Okay. Any objection to that as a title from anyone here?
Can you repeat it, Olaf?
Yes, I have to actually look it up to be really sure what it's applicant support for new GTLD.
Yeah.
Second.
Good.
Okay, great.
Very generic. I mean, apparently they couldn't fit in more than that those lines.
Yeah, we were getting wordy as we tried to be more and more careful and more precise. Okay. So have we had any contact and approval from...
Here we go. Support for new GTLD applicants. That's the very generic title we have.
Okay, great. So, and from this, I assume we're having a panel, and we've talked about having panelists from each of the teams and trying to make sure that we've got geographical, et cetera, distribution on the panel. And gender as well, but also, have we gotten confirmation from participants, for example, the name's slipping me at the moment, from our board participants?
Katim Touré.
Yes, thank you.
I haven't seen anything of the sort, and that was on Carla's table, I think.
Okay, so we need to confirm that.
I guess we need to have confirmations on the names suggested in our little conversations earlier on, that they actually will attend and be available for the panel discussion.
Yes. Okay.
This is Andrew. Have we determined, are we going to try and do this as one panel? Are we going to do it as two panels? Are we going to, you know, how many people do you want to prepare? I'm just thinking in terms of having us be ready to go.
Yeah, and that's what, although we only have 3 minutes left at the moment. But, but basically, yes, we were thinking of it as one panel. I think we had thought of, what was it, Olaf? And you probably have the list of names in front of you. I don't. Of asking, what, two people from each of the teams?
Yes, and sort of co-moderation by the co-chairs, so Avery and Evan being the moderators, and two or three members of each working team for the actual panelists, and together with one or more board members. Katim Touré, as he was the promoter of the Resolution 20, is one obvious choice if he's available, but we need to find out.
And we'd even come up with a first thought of who to ask, hadn't we, for each of the teams?
I think we did, but I have that just in front of me,
right.
And I don't recall it very well. So I'd rather put it. Could I put that in the little action points?
That'd be great.
With question marks on.
So that'd be great. Elaine, I see your hand.
Yes, I'd like to participate as a panelist if you haven't already.
I think your name was on the list.
Okay, thank you.
But thank you. And I think Andrew's name was on the list, but I don't remember who else is.
I would very much like to participate as a panelist as well.
Right. And basically what we did when we were coming the names was the people who had been vocal and active, but also trying for some. And I think that when Olaf digs that up, then we can, you know, talk about it on the list.
Avril, where can we find the list?
Okay. Oh, you will find it in a few hours when I send out the action points.
Okay.
Right. And then, you know, we can work it out. We have to make sure everybody's going to be there. We're not even sure of that yet. So.
Another question. Who decided on this list?
We didn't decide on this list. Basically, between Evan, Olaf, and I, as we were trying to put this thing together, we think, well, who could we ask? And so it's not a definitive list. It's a first cut at who is it that we could ask. And it was between the two chairs and Olaf, trying to figure out who's been active, who do we know is coming, you know, what about distribution, et cetera.
Okay, good.
Anything else? It's now 30 minutes after the hour. Our 90 minutes are done. Any other business? I love the way that always sits at the end there, and it's, if you've got
Avery?
It so longer. Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is Tony Harris.
You're here.
I was caught in a subway that broke down, and I only joined the call 15 minutes ago, but I did want to apologize for being late.
Okay, thank you. You probably want to listen to the recording. We definitely talked about stuff you'll care about, so, and hopefully, you know, get back to us on the list on any of the issues.
Okay, fine. Thank you very
much. Thank you. And I'm glad you got out of the subway.
Thanks.
Any other business or issues? If not, I thank you all. I'll talk to you all next week. Make sure you read through the drafts that Elaine and Andrew are going to put out for us so that we can do wordsmithing as necessary next week. And now I'm a minute over, so goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thanks, everyone.
Right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Thank you.